The Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd State Legislative Session will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Lee Johnson.
Present.
Rep. Edelson.
Present.
Rep. Feist.
Present.
Rep. Grossel.
Present.
Rep. Hollins.
Present.
Rep. Hewitt.
Present.
Rep. Cleavorn.
Present.
Rep. Long, excused. Rep. Lucero.
About to brew my afternoon caffeine.
Rep. Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Rep. Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Rep. O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
Rep. Pinto.
Present.
Rep. Poston.
Present.
Rep. Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Rep. Vang, excused. Rep. Shung.
Here.
And that concludes roll call.
Very well, members. We do have a quorum. This hearing is conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing for hearings to be held via use of distance voting, remote electronic voting, or voting by other means to protect the health and safety of the public, staff, and members. The hearing is live streamed on the House website and can be accessed by visiting this committee's webpage. While on that page, you can also find information on how to offer public testimony. Those wishing to do so are encouraged to contact our committee administrator, Jamal Lundy, 24 hours prior to a hearing. That email address is also available on the committee page. Members, our first order of business today is to adopt our March 8th minutes. And Representative Frazier, I'm just going to keep on picking on you throughout the rest of the session to beg you for a motion.
Not a problem. So moved, Chair.
Very well. Motion before us, discussion. Oh, you know what I haven't done? Let me get my list of hands up. Okay, really well. Representative Johnson, we're okay with a voice vote?
That would be fine.
Thank you, Lee Johnson. All in favor of the motion to adopt the minutes of March 8th, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of March 8th are adopted. Members, today is Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Day. It is part of our broad portfolios committee to provide oversight and resources for our regulatory system in regards to alcohol and gambling activities. We have three bills up today, and the just checking to see. Yes, all three are going to require motions for us to move the bills forward. The first one is House File 2675. Katiza Watoon, Representative Katiza Watoon, welcome to our committee. Representative Frazier, if you can provide us a motion, we can get that bill before us. The motion would be to refer to taxes.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Frazier moves that House File 2675 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Katiza Watoon, my apologies. Your bill is before us. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And exciting to be here in public safety. If I'm remembering correctly, this is my first time before your committee. So
great to have you here.
You considering this bill today. So House File 2675, members, is a proposal to enhance and adapt the regulatory framework of the direct-to-consumer wine shipping industry. Like so many other online businesses, this wine shipping channel experienced massive growth over the past 2 years due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2021, the direct-to-consumer industry hit over $4 billion in shipments, according to the Ship Compliant Report by Sovos. So many new buyers entered the direct-to-consumer channel in 2020 during the height of the pandemic, and domestic wineries seem to have retained those new buyers. This proposal does a number of things, including implementing licensing structure, tax parity with Minnesota wineries and retailers, and a small expansion of volume that's available for direct shipment annually. The legislation treats both Minnesota wineries and out-of-state wineries the same as far as shipping requirement and requiring licenses. Shippers would report the same information for wine shipped from Minnesota or into the state. This is beneficial for those small businesses and for the consumers who are wishing to purchase wine without having to travel to a winery on site. This proposal has been in the works for some time. Former Representative Lesch carried the proposal in the previous biennium, where it was successfully passed in the House. This proposal is supported by the industry, including the Wine Institute, the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association, the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association, the Beer Wholesalers, the Wine and Spirit Wholesalers, and the Teamsters. I do have Joel Carlson on hand to share a bit more information about the details of the legislation and the public safety purview, and we will be happy to answer questions.
Fantastic. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. I do remember hearing this bill in the past, and my hope is that we can get this across the finish line. As a wine enthusiast myself, both locally and nationally, it's kind of important to me, so I'm glad it's here. We have Mr. Carlson. Joel Carlson, if you can come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Wine and Spirit Wholesalers Association. Mr. Chairman, the last time I was in a live conference committee was with you over this bill, and I hope that we get there again, and we'd be happy to have this carried in your public safety bill with all of the DPS provisions that are in it. I think Representative Katiza Watoon did a great job explaining the bill and the need for it. I would remind members that it's also a parity issue. Wine that is shipped into Minnesota right now comes in without tax, sales, or excise. And so it's a disadvantage to our local retailers and wholesalers who pay the excise tax. So there's a tax parity issue involved in this as well. We'd appreciate your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I don't know of any opposition to the bill, at least in this chamber.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Always good to have you in our committee as well. Members, let's open this up for conversation, debate, questions, et cetera. We'll begin with Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariotti. And for Mr. Carlson, what has been the opposition? Why are we still here?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Novotny, I think the main point of contention that we've picked up from the other body is a change in the law that we think is necessary to get everyone on board. And that is, we currently allow an unregulated 2 cases of wine per consumer to be shipped to Minnesota. This changes that number 2 cases to 12 cases. It's not one a month, but 12 cases annually. And some people feel that that is too big of an expansion. I can tell you, I've done exhaustive research, and many states have a very similar regulatory system as what this bill contains. And the range is we're on the absolute low end at 2, and it goes more likely from 6 or 10 all the way to unlimited. And so that has been the main issue, is the increase in the wine that could be shipped to a consumer directly in Minnesota. We'd like to overcome that opposition. But if we're asking people to become taxpayers, we're asking them to get registered and licensed and make a reporting, meet reporting requirements to AGED, we think that that modest increase is warranted.
Mr. Carlson, the other body is not as adaptive as the House on a number of issues.
We're working on it.
Yes, good. Hopefully that it's opening up that space. Representative Adney.
Thank you, Chair. That'll be all.
Oh, okay, very well. Representative Polston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I got a couple of questions for the bill author. Representative Katiza Watoon, is this going to have any effect on wine consumers in Minnesota?
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Poston. Yes, I think the main impact, as Mr. Carlson just said, is that people can order wine online from out-of-state wineries and have it shipped to Minnesota, and I believe that the number of bottles is not regulated. The number of cases itself isn't regulated unless you're ordering from a specific winery. So right now, you know, if you're a big fan of Rombar Chardonnay, or if you want to be in a wine club through one of the domestic wineries that might be in California or elsewhere, the most that you can get per person is 2 cases. And so this will increase that on an annual basis up to 12. So oftentimes these wine clubs will allow people to get a deeper discount, like if they're buying a third or fourth or so on case. And so they most likely they're not able to take advantage of some of those discounts because we do currently not regulate, but cap that at 2 cases per person. Does that make sense?
Yep. Thank you, Representative. One additional question. Will it have any impact on Minnesota businesses like grape growers, wine retailers, et cetera?
Representative Katisa Watu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I will probably ask Mr. Carlson to get a little bit more into the details there, but right now, as we mentioned previously, Minnesota businesses are required to pay taxes on wine shipments, and out-of-state ones are not. But Mr. Carlson, if you can clarify a little bit further for Representative Holston.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Representative Holston, this will have a positive impact on Minnesota retailers and Minnesota grape growers and wineries, because they are limited to the same 2 cases that they can ship to Minnesota consumers as well. So that will expand for them. It will expand their opportunities to sell product to Minnesotans directly. So we think there's a benefit for them, and we certainly don't see any downside really from the legislation.
Representative Polston.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative Katisa Watum. Thank you, Chair.
Very well. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question for the bill author, the reason I voted against this in the past and I plan to vote against it today is because not because of the increase in the quantity, but because of the tax increase that's involved. And whereas there will be new taxes where previously taxes are not collected, especially in a time of budget surplus already, I don't think we need to increase taxes. So have you considered, or would you be willing to increase from 2 to 12, but eliminate the tax increase provision?
Representative Katisa Watu.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lucero. I know I recall our conversation from back in Commerce. And I think that a really important piece of this legislation and how much it impacts Minnesota businesses is that currently there is not tax parity between wineries that are in-state wineries and wineries that are out-of-state wineries. So I think that that's a really important piece that we achieve, and that this bill will treat our in-state and then other domestic wineries out-of-state equally when it comes to tax regulation.
Thank you.
Representative Lucero.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members. I understand the concept of this bill. Unfortunately, these companies don't have nexus in the state where they actually have a physical location, which, if I remember correctly, the courts in the past have ruled for tax purposes on shipping, although I believe there has been some changes it implemented some of the sales tax issues, so I'm not sure how this will work. But I do have some concerns that this could actually hurt our local wineries that we have, because people can now, instead of going to our local wineries, doing the wine tasting, picking up a couple bottles to bring home at the local level. And in fact, I know individuals that travel all over the state just to go to these wineries for their wine tasting and then buying a few bottles from them. And they go back to them for their wine tasting. And it's good for their local business, whether it's the people traveling to go to them or just the ones in your local community. So I have issues that might actually affect them. But I'm also concerned, is there any restrictions from businesses ordering these wines from out of state to come in, the 12 cases they could get it at? They might be able to get a lower price doing that than going through their normal suppliers and then selling them at a dramatically higher rate because it's our local suppliers might not be able to get that wine because they're not on the approved list in Minnesota for some of these wines. Is this going to affect any of that or cause any issues there with those at restaurants or that actually serve wine and start just doing a specialty limited edition or limited quantity on a certain wine?
Representative Cadiza with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm going to defer to Mr. Carlson on this one, as with his experience with the wholesalers, and he might have a better response.
Very well, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson, and thank you for the question. You need to understand that this only applies to wine that is shipped directly to a consumer. Wine that is shipped into Minnesota for ultimate sale to a retailer by law has to rest with a wholesaler. It has to run through the three-tier system. This is the only area where we allow product to be sent directly to a consumer. And so the situation that you're talking of where a restaurant couldn't get it, they can't buy a product directly from a winery right now with or without this bill. This bill doesn't change that in any way. Most wineries want to have their product available in the retail market because that's how they generate repeat sales. And so, this is only applies in the situation where it goes directly to a consumer and has nothing to do with the wholesaling of the product or eventually going to an off-sale or retail establishment for on-sale accounts. And I would say I understand your point, Representative, about Nexus and the Wayfair case. But I would refer members to page 2 of the bill on lines 2.21. And therein lies our problem with tax. We specifically have exempted these products from being taxed as they are shipped into Minnesota. It's specifically excluded. So Wayfair didn't fix the problem for us and for the Minnesota retailers. You can ship in at a 13-14% price differential because you don't pay the wholesale tax and you don't pay the sales tax. So this bill corrects that major problem, and I appreciate Representative Lucero's concern about a tax increase, but the unfairness that is in place right now and has been in place since 2005, we think really needs to change. So I appreciate those questions, and hopefully that clarifies it a little bit for you.
That certainly does illuminate the broader context. I appreciate that, Mr. Carlson. Representative Johnson?
Chair Mariani, Mr. Carlson, thank you for the information. And I don't know everything on tax laws. That's why when I have tax questions, I ask my wife who has her MBT.
A wise man. Representative Sarah, I think your hand is back up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just reiterate a point that I didn't make here, but I did in a previous committee. If tax parity is something we're seeking to achieve, which I'm not opposed to, there's two ways to do it. We can either increase the taxes, which is what we're doing in this bill, or we could similarly decrease the taxes and achieve tax parity. That's what I'm in favor of. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. The only thing I would add to this, but this will be a conversation in taxes, no doubt, assuming the bill is forwarded. I think it's important to raise it here as well, which is the bill also contains, the appropriations of money for our alcohol enforcement work. At our alcohol and gambling enforcement division in the department. And that costs. So there is a fair, link between the appropriate costs, for the very much appropriate, regulatory oversight, those involved in the transaction, those profiting from the sale, those benefiting from the consumption. And so those resources do need to come from somewhere. And obviously, this representative sir, we can always argue about where they come, but therein lies a bit of a logic that I think is consistent with other parts of our tax code and particular services and products, et cetera. Representative Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, I guess I can't resist noting, just building on what you're saying, that in response to Representative Lucero, that I'd urge him to maybe separate out the question of what's the proper level of taxation to fund those activities that you just described, Mr. Chair, and then the idea that at least everybody should be having the same tax level, whatever it is, and that certainly right now for giving a favor to out-of-state wineries, that doesn't seem right. So I guess I kind of urge him to maybe separate out those two questions. And the first thing is let's at least agree that everybody should be paying the same rate. And then there's a separate question about how much the tax should be to fund those activities you described. Great bill, Representative Cattese with you, and thanks for your work on it.
Yeah, fair debate. Members, I don't see anything else. Anyone else? Representative Cattese with you, and I'll turn to you to close us out, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did want to address Representative Johnson's point about wine tourism. Certainly, I have my favorites around the state, particularly Carlos Creek, that's up in Representative Franzen's area in Alexandria, and then Cannon River down in Cannon Falls. So I think that while this won't necessarily, minimize any wine tourism that people are hopeful to participate in and traveling across the state, it will allow folks to order wine online or via phone potentially and get more cases from their favorite wineries without having to drive to that location. So I think that that's something to consider. And I think that it's time for us to begin regulating this process and licensing, and I appreciate the support.
Very well. I also like Javin's Family Vineyard down St. Peter way. But yeah, we have such an incredible diversity of production in our state. I've been around long enough to recall in the 90s when this whole industry really began and took off, and our committees would make some visits to some of the early adopters out there. We're pretty excited about it. And I will admit, because it's long enough now, it's so long ago, then Representative Tomasoni had a bill and had some of the producers, early producers with us. And just to make sure that we understood what it, the nature of the product, he brought a small taste for the committee and distributed these little glasses around the committee members. Hard to do now in virtual space, but this whole sector has certainly grown much to Minnesota's benefit over the decades. All right, with that, Representative Fraser renews his motion that House File 2675 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Fraser?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fraser, aye. Lee Johnson?
Aye.
Lee Johnson, aye. Rep. Edelson?
Aye.
Rep. Edelson, aye. Rep. Feist?
Aye.
Rep. Feist, aye. Rep. Grossel?
Aye.
Rep. Grossel, aye. Rep. Hollins?
Aye.
Rep. Hollins, aye. Rep. Hewitt?
Aye.
Rep. Hewitt, aye. Rep. Cleavorn?
Aye.
Rep. Cleavorn, aye. Rep. Long?
Aye.
Rep. Long, aye. Rep. Lucero?
Lucero, no.
Rep. Lucero, nay. Rep. Mueller?
Mueller votes yes.
Rep. Mueller, aye. Rep. Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Rep. Novotny, nay. Rep. O'Neill?
Aye.
Rep. O'Neill, aye. Rep. Pinto?
Aye.
Rep. Pinto, aye. Rep. Poston?
Aye.
Rep. Poston, aye. Rep. Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Rep. Raleigh, aye. Rep. Vang, excused. With 15 ayes, 2 nays.
Not me.
Oh, Rep. Shong. Rep. Shong.
Shong, aye.
Rep. Shong, aye. With 16 ayes, 2 nays, and 1 excuse, that concludes roll call.
Very well. With 16 ayes, 2 nays, and 1 excuse, the motion prevails. And House File 2675 is referred to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watund. Come back and visit us again, please. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. With that, we now move to House File 3722. Representative Stevenson, Liquor Regulation Advisory Council established. And Representative Frazier, I'm going to bug you again for a motion to refer House File 3722 to the Committee on Commerce.
Don't move, Chair.
Very well. House File, Representative Frazier moves the House File 3722 be referred to the Committee on Commerce. Representative Stevenson, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we have, did you do the amendment? I'm sorry, I was distracted by a text here.
No, it's quite all right. We have not acted on the amendment. Do you wish to move on the A2 amendment?
I would appreciate if the A2 amendment could be incorporated. Yes, please.
Very well. Representative Frazier, if you would move the A2 amendment, I'd greatly appreciate it.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. The A2 amendment is before us. Representative Stevenson, has this state shaped the bill as the author wishes it to be, amendment?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Very well. And so then, assuming we'll adopt it, then we'll get into the full discussion of the bill. Representative Johnson, voice vote should suffice?
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. Thank you, Lee Johnson. With that, all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Stevenson, your bill is adopted as before us.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, members of the Public Safety Committee. The bill that's before you today is actually three different bills that are all intended to be considered for possible inclusion in the liquor omnibus bill that we are preparing in the Commerce Committee, but fall within the jurisdiction of the Public Safety Committee due to the involvement of AGED. Rather than bring the entire liquor omnibus through the Public Safety Committee, we thought it wise to bring just the pieces to you, and then we will assemble it into a larger bill, thus sparing you the spectacle of a liquor omnibus hearing in public safety. There's really three components. The first piece that I'll draw your attention to relates to town ball. Some members will recall that this is a proposal that Representative Nash has brought on the as a bill and as an amendment on the floor on several occasions. The first section deals with that, and primarily the issue of 3-2 beer being not available, particularly in keg format, to people who engage in town ball and other athletic events. And this simply enables those organizations to obtain a strong beer license. The second piece is this Liquor Advisory Council that is actually the underlying bill that we just amended. The idea here is to create a group that can sort through some of the liquor issues before the legislature weighs in. You know, liquor issues have generally taken up a lot of time and energy and emotion here at the Capitol, and we've had success with these advisory groups in other areas, such as workers' comp insurance, where the legislature used to fight a lot. We got an advisory council to try and sort through some of the issues, and now we don't have to fight about it nearly as much because they come to us much further advanced after there have been discussions among stakeholders. So the bill creates a advisory council that consists of people from the three tiers of the system. Anyone familiar with Minnesota's liquor laws knows that there's a three-tier system in place here, and the advisory council includes representatives from all three tiers. Would be put together by the Public Safety Department. The last piece is just an appropriation to hire two additional full-time employees at AGED. AGED has had the same number of agents for some amount of time, even as the craft explosion has occurred, meaning there's a lot more producers in Minnesota than there ever were before. And so there is a need to have more staff on hand at AGED to make sure that that production is happening safely and in compliance with Minnesota's liquor laws. And so we would just be adding two agents. I would note that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in all three tiers and of the liquor industry, and AGED has a sterling reputation for the work that they do. They're an agency that the state can be really proud of. We just want to give them a little more resources.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. You don't have any testifiers, I believe, on the bill?
I did not bring any testifiers.
All right, very well. So then why don't we then open it up for conversation with committee members. I see Representative Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Stevenson, thanks for bringing this forward. I know you're doing a lot of work in the on the omnibus liquor bill. I myself have issues with one of the sins we're talking about today, alcoholism. I have a family member that's actually had a liver transplant because of alcoholism. As my career in law enforcement, I've went to thousands of domestics. 90% of them where alcohol was involved. The other 10% was drug addiction issues, and they were usually high on something, and a lot of that 10% of alcohol was also involved. I can think of my entire career in 27 years. I only had one domestic situation that alcohol or drugs was not involved, and they had that resolved before law enforcement, myself and other officers got there. So I have a lot of trouble with any expansion of alcohol. It's just from my personal experience. So even though this might be a good bill, because of this expansion of alcohol, I cannot support it. I hope you understand.
Thank you, Lee Johnson. I can share that my brother-in-law is a retired county sheriff assistant in Phoenix, and I think similar to you, his experience in law enforcement has been painfully affected by seeing the worst impacts of alcohol on the people he was tasked to provide safety for in many ways. And your observation is absolutely to be respected and constantly visible, made visible before us. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that it's typically your style to have the lead go last. I apologize for jumping in. So thank you for the deference to this. I do have a technical question for the author. At the end of line 2.7 of the bill, it says section 340(alpha.404). I believe that's what it says. And I believe—
Can you give me the line number again?
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. It's 2.7, Representative Stevenson.
Yep, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah, so 340(alpha.404). I think that should be 340(alpha.301). I think that refers to the 301 section, not the 404. Okay. I think it might be a typo.
Chair Stevenson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, so I'll just tell you what the intention here is, and then I see we have Mr. Klayman on the Zoom, and I'll let him answer me if we've got the right section of law here. But the intention is for this to be a seat held on the board by a craft brewer, a smaller brewer, as opposed to one of the larger entities in the state. But as to whether that is the correct statute, I would certainly defer to Mr. Klayman.
Very well, Mr. Klamath, if you can come forward, state your name for the record, and I believe you've heard the inquiry.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm Chris Klayman. I'm with the House Research Department, staffing the liquor area. Representative Raleigh is correct. That reference on line 2.7 to section 340A.404, that is an errant cross-reference. The correct reference would be section 340A.301. And that's the section of law that actually references those small brewer licenses that are subsequent to that section reference.
Very well. Good catch, Representative Rowley. Let me just pose the question, and so this would be to you, to all, but primarily to our lead. The chair is amenable to doing an oral amendment that would correct that. If we're not comfortable doing that, that's fine. We should be in agreement on wanting to do that. If the bill continues, we can certainly move, you know, address that issue in the following committee. Representative Rowling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was going through Mason's and trying to figure out how to present this in a logical way. My reading of it is, because I think this can be classified as a typo, I don't think it needs to be an amendment. I think it would be a technical correction, Mr. Chair.
Let me ask legal counsel on how the chair that would responsibly do that at this point.
All right, Chair Mariani, whether it's an oral, we can do it as an oral amendment. It's because it is a technical change, that's not an issue.
Okay.
But when it leaves here, it should be correct.
I agree. So you're amenable to us doing that then?
Yes, I am.
Very well. Representative Rowley, would you like to make that motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
All right. So let's have our legal counsel read the motion before us.
Mr. Chair and members, the motion would be page 2, line 7, delete section 340A.404 and insert section 340A.301.
All right. That would be my motion, Mr. Chair. Agreed.
All right. So Representative Rowley, so
voice vote is fine as well.
Very well. Thank you, Lee Johnson. Any further discussion? Very well. All in favor of the Representative Rowley's motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the amendment, the oral amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Rowley. Is there anything else? Did you have something else? All right. Very well. Chair Stevenson, I don't see any other hands up. So you get to close this out and we'll take a vote on your bill.
Well, thank you, Chair Mariani, members of the committee, Representative Rowley, for catching that mistake. Appreciate that. And I also just wanted, I didn't have a chance to speak after Representative Johnson. I would say that I very much appreciate his concern relative to alcohol and alcoholism. As a prosecutor myself, I can sort of relate to what he's talking about, and I certainly understand and respect his views. But I would ask members to support the bill.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Members, Representative Fraser renews his motion that House File 3722, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Commerce. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Fraser?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fraser, aye. Lee Johnson?
No.
Lee Johnson, nay. Rep. Edelson?
Aye.
Rep. Edelson, aye. Rep. Feist?
Aye.
Rep. Feist, aye. Rep. Grossel?
Aye.
Rep. Grossel, aye. Rep. Hollins?
Aye.
Rep. Hollins, aye. Rep. Hewitt?
Aye.
Rep. Hewitt, aye. Rep. Cleavorn?
Aye.
Rep. Cleavorn, aye. Rep. Long?
Aye.
Rep. Long, aye. Rep. Lucero?
Lucero, no.
Rep. Lucero, nay. Rep. Mueller?
Mueller, no.
Rep. Mueller, nay. Rep. Navani?
Navani, no.
Rep. Navani, nay. Rep. O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Rep. O'Neill, aye. Rep. Pinto?
Aye.
Rep. Pinto, aye. Rep. Poston?
Aye.
Rep. Poston, aye. Rep. Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Rep. Raleigh, aye. Rep. Vang?
Aye.
Rep. Vang, aye. Rep. Shung?
Shung, aye.
Rep. Shung, aye. With 15 ayes and 4 nays, that concludes roll call.
Very well. With 15 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails. And House File 3722, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Commerce. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. And you can stay right there because the next bill is yours as well. And Representative Frazier, if you'd be so kind to move House File 167 be referred to the Committee on Human Services, I'd appreciate it.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. The motion is before us. And Chair Stevenson, there is a DE1 amendment. I take it you want us to move that at this point.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Rep. Frazier, would you do us the favor of moving that?
Yes, I will, Chair. So moved.
Very well. And so this is a DE1 amendment. Lee Johnson, voice vote, okay?
Voice vote would be fine, but I wish she, I would request a little, just a short explanation of this, because this is a totally different than what the bill title is.
That's appropriate, Lee Johnson. Chair Stevenson, if you can tell us what the DE1 amendment does, and in particular, the difference relative to the bill as it's currently before us.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Lee Johnson, and perhaps if it's okay with the chair, I'll just make my opening remarks now, because it would be kind of redundant to do that after the amendment.
Certainly.
So this amendment takes a bill that is unrelated and turns it into a bill to legalize sports betting in Minnesota. We did this in order to accommodate the schedule of this very busy and very important this very busy committee that considers very important work. The bill legalizes sports betting in Minnesota, and I want to be clear from the outset that sports betting is already happening in Minnesota. We have a robust black market here. People just use shady websites and digital workarounds and other means to place bets. What this bill is about is creating a legal marketplace that will displace that black market, and in doing so, provide consumer protection, ensure the integrity of the game, and limit money laundering and other illegal activity. In 2018, the Supreme Court struck down longstanding federal law prohibiting sports betting in states other than Nevada and New Jersey. Since then, over 30 states have legalized sports betting. All of Minnesota's neighboring states, including Canada, have legal sports betting. This is an idea whose time has come. Having said that, it's important to get this right. This will be the biggest change in our state's gambling laws in 40 years. And so during the interim, I engaged with every stakeholder I could. I traveled the state from Red Lake Nation in northwestern Minnesota to sports data companies located in downtown Minneapolis, listening and trying to develop a Minnesota-specific model for legal sports betting. During that process, I consulted with all 11 of the tribal nations located in Minnesota, along with our professional sports teams, the University of Minnesota, sports betting companies, and experts on problem gaming. I also examined the law in other states and that have legal sports betting, and even took a field trip to Iowa. The product of all of this work is the bill before you today. The bill includes both brick and mortar sports betting at tribal casinos, as well as statewide mobile sports betting operated by the tribes in partnership with commercial operators. To put that in plain terms, if this bill passes, Minnesotans will be able to visit sports betting lounges at casinos all across Minnesota, and they'll also be able to wager on sports on their smartphones anywhere in the state. We would tax mobile sports betting at levels consistent or below states around the country. The money generated from this tax will be dedicated to three causes. First, the regulations and consumer protections necessary to make sure that sports betting is fair and doesn't influence what is happening on the field, particularly at the amateur level. Second, we devote 40% of the tax revenue generated to addressing and treating problem gaming. We need to be honest here. Just as in the last bill, we were talking about the problems that alcohol can have in our society, gambling can create problems in our society as well. Most people can gamble without issue, but for a small subset, it's a real problem. And we would devote more resources than ever before to confronting that problem. Finally, 40% of the tax revenue raised would go to funding youth sports and other youth programming across the state, but with particular emphasis on communities experiencing a high level of juvenile crime. I don't need to tell the members of this committee that juvenile crime is at an unacceptable level in Minnesota. And while there's no single cause or one single solution, we know that when kids are busy playing sports, they're not getting into trouble doing something else. It's taken a lot of work to get the bill to this point, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And members from both parties have come to me with ideas about how to improve this bill, much with the liquor bill that we just considered. Gambling is an issue where the usual rhythms of partisanship that we find here at the Capitol don't come neatly into play here. And I'm very open to ideas from both Democrats and Republicans on this bill, and have been collaborating very closely with Representative Garofalo in writing it. We have at least 5 additional committee stops in front of us, and I would encourage members to keep those ideas coming. With regard to this committee, the bill does have some changes to criminal law to reflect the legalization of the activity and also the some of the criminal elements that could come into play after the bill is after the activity is legalized. It also entrusts regulation of this to AGED, which, as I mentioned a moment ago, has a sterling reputation in terms of the work that they do. And of course, I did just mention that we are using some of the money generated by the tax revenue in an effort at some juvenile crime prevention programming. So that is the bill in an overview, as well as the areas that specifically relate to the jurisdiction of this committee. And I'm happy to answer questions after the amendment is adopted.
Very well. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. We may afterwards maybe slow down a bit just to review what those, in particular, those criminal law provisions would be. Representative Johnson, or Lee Johnson, Representative Johnson, thank you for slowing this down. I think for transparency's sake, it was particularly important given the big change, right, of this amendment to this particular vehicle bill. Are you okay still with a voice vote, or do you?
I'm fine with a voice vote.
Okay, very well. So that'll put the bill in the shape the author wishes it to be before us. All in favor of adopting the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And House File 167, as amended, is before us. And Representative Chris, Stevenson, I do in particular want to make sure that committee members are obviously paying attention to the whole bill, but we are the Public Safety Committee. I want to make sure that we understand those provisions. I could certainly turn to our House research staff to quickly walk through those. I should have given them a heads up on that, unless you wish to do that.
Mr. Chair, I am comfortable with either form. I know I saw Mr. Johnson is on the Zoom. He did, at our request, kind of create an outline of which areas of the bill are within the jurisdiction of each committee. And I do have that in front of me, but I'm also happy to defer to Mr. Johnson if the chair or he would prefer.
Very well. Mr. Johnson, if you would be so kind, and I should have given you a heads up before, so I do apologize for that, but I think it would be helpful to help focus this committee's jurisdictional attention to that. So if you could walk us through that quickly, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to have to first apologize. I'm afraid I have the flu.
Oh, no.
My voice is mostly gone. But I'll do my best here to get us through.
Mr. Johnson, why don't we have the chair do that? And then if you could just be available in case he misses something or there's a correction, if you can just sort of wave your hand and I'll call on you. Let's do it that way. Holy cow, the flu in March. A quick recovery for you, sir. Chair Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hope Mr. Johnson recovers very quickly. I know, I'm a vicious taskmaster and I appreciate the hard work he has been doing on this bill very sincerely. So Article 3 of the bill does create new crimes relative to sports betting, including potential felonies. If you give me one moment, I have his sheet in front of me. I just also want to have the DE in front of me on another screen here. So we can see that there are some definitions and a general prohibition upon engaging in sports wagering outside of what is authorized under this chapter. There's a differentiation in the bill in terms of severity based on age, people who are under the age of 18 versus, or people who are soliciting people who are under the age of 18 to make bets versus people who are of legal age to make bets under the bill. And that relates to different amounts of consequence. There's also an aggregation provision, which is pretty familiar, I'm sure, to members of this committee, as well as information about proof of age and defenses. We do also have new crimes created around fraud and bribery at sporting events. Certainly, we want to be clear about preserving the integrity of the game. And I alluded that we are spending some money on compliance, but there's also, in addition to that, I don't know if you would call that a carrot exactly, there is a stick element here in terms of what becomes criminal. Then I would say section, we see that Article 1, I alluded to earlier, the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division, AGED, is doing enforcement work related to regulatory and licensing work. And I won't go into real detail about all of the licensing and regulation aspects because that was covered very thoroughly in the Commerce Committee. But certainly want to note that it is AGED who will be doing that work. Article 2, Section 6, Subdivision 6 has funding for AGED, and I need to get to that in the bill, but I am guessing that that is the fact that we use allocate 10% of the tax revenue generated to fund AGED. And last but not least, we do require a certain amount of background checks provisions, which are performed by the BCA in order to be able to participate as a on the commercial end of this activity. That is in Article 1, Section 6.
All right, very well. Thank you, Chair Stevenson.
And I got the thumbs up from Ben Johnson. I'm really proud of that.
Hey, well done. You know, he doesn't hand those out easily. So,
no.
Well done. All right, so let's move to your testifiers. We have Andy Plattel. I apologize if I mispronounce your name. If you can come forward, state your name for the record, your affiliation, and your give us your testimony. We'd appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Andy Plato, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association, or MIGA. MIGA represents 10 of the 11 tribes in Minnesota and appreciates the ability to provide comments on the DE amendment to House File 167, Chair Stevenson's bill to authorize sports wagering. Since the federal law prohibiting states from legalizing sports wagering was overturned in 2018, Minnesota tribes and their leaders have closely watched as other states, including those surrounding Minnesota, have provided a legal marketplace for sports bettors. Of particular importance has been the impact sports wagering has had on other tribal gaming operations, as gaming provides the economic lifeblood of tribal governments, tribal communities, and the tens of thousands of Minnesotans they employ. Upon review, in many cases, the impact of sports wagering expansion has been a positive one, but only when the authorizing legislation is carefully crafted to ensure that tribes play a critical role in bringing the marketplace to consumers. Tribal leaders continue to review the Delete Everything Amendment and hope to soon be as comfortable with the details as they currently are with the general framework. But in concept, the DE does recognize that tribes, as the state's gaming experts, are best positioned to operate Minnesota's sports betting market, both in retail and mobile environments. For these reasons, I'm pleased to ask the committee to approve the bill today. As this committee has jurisdiction over the Department of Public Safety, it's appropriate to comment specifically on the regulatory structure contemplated in the DE. Tribes simply request clear and fair regulation and do believe DPS is well positioned to provide this guidance. As in all areas of the proposal, MIGA and individual tribes will continue to offer their input in good faith as the bill moves through the process. Tribal leaders and staff would like to offer our thanks to Chair Stevenson for his respectful engagement on this issue and wish to continue our conversations with the legislature and other stakeholders to ensure any expansion of off-reservation gaming benefits both tribes and the Minnesota sports betting public. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you again for the ability to provide comments and your willingness to consider tribal voices throughout this process. I stand ready to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Plato. And please extend our gratitude to our tribal leaders for engaging and for providing your presence here to extend their voices. Their voices are always welcome in this committee. Thank you, sir. With that, we'll move to Pat Gibbs. Pat, if you can come forward, state your name for the record, give us your affiliation and your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the House Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance and Policy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today related to authorizing and regulating mobile sports wagering in Minnesota. And thank you to Representative Stevenson for your continued willingness to work with my client and other stakeholders to create a sports wagering structure that works for Minnesota. My name is Pat Gibbs. I'm an attorney with the law firm Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe. It is my pleasure to serve as National Public Policy Counsel for the Sports Betting Alliance, or SBA. The SBA is a trade organization comprised of many of the top operators in the mobile sports wagering industry: DraftKings, FanDuel, Bally's, BetMGM, and Fanatics. Together, our members advocate for competitive mobile sports wagering in the United States. And although I represent SBA in state capitals across the country, I'm particularly pleased to advocate for bringing this industry to Minnesota, as I grew up in Bloomington, graduated from Jefferson High School and the University of Minnesota, and am a native Minnesotan. So it's great to be here. When considering the policies and impacts of regulating sports wagering, it is important to recognize that this would not bring a new activity to this state that Minnesotans have never seen before. Instead, studies estimate that 1.1 million Minnesotans place $2.5 billion in illegal sports wagers annually using offshore sites on their phones and computers right now. These offshore sites do not care whether users placing a bet do so responsibly or whether they are extending themselves beyond a point they are comfortable with. These offshore sites do not use the best available technology to ensure that their users aren't underage. And these offshore sites do not pay taxes to or cooperate with the state to assure best practices are carried out diligently. Alternatively, operators in the regulated mobile sports wagering markets in the United States take public safety and responsible gaming seriously. We want to provide the excitement of feeling a little extra invested in the outcome of a game while instituting the guardrails to do so responsibly. Not only is it just the right thing to do, but in a regulated market, the continued use of our license is conditioned upon our strict adherence to responsible gaming and any other provisions put in place by the state. Before I close, I would like to briefly mention just some of the public safety and responsible gaming benefits that come along with a regulated mobile sports wagering market. First, regulated operators offer users the ability to limit the time they spend on the sports betting app, set a cap on their own daily, weekly, monthly deposit or wager amounts, and exclude themselves completely from engaging in that form of gaming. Regulated operators have dedicated player protection teams to support the monitoring of user accounts for potential problem gaming behavior and language. Regulated operators require all employees to receive responsible gaming training at onboarding and periodically thereafter. Regulated operators work with health and research partners like Harvard Medical School's Cambridge Health Alliance Division on Addiction to inform strategic planning, material development, and advising on evidence-based efforts. Regulated operators also provide substantial responsible gaming resources and messaging directly in the sports wagering apps. Such resources include links to several self-help toolkits and the National Council on Problem Gambling's screening tools. With a regulated competitive mobile market, Minnesota looks to develop a safer environment for its 1.1 million existing sports bettors to operate within. Not only do regulated operators provide responsible gaming services directly, but this bill as proposed designates 40% of the generated tax revenue to a fund to address problem gambling. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbs, and welcome, if at least virtually, back home. Good to have you back in Minnesota, at least your voice, if nothing else. Very well.
Yeah, thank you.
Very well. Next, we have Matt Melanthan. I apologize if I've mispronounced your last name. If you can come forward, sir, and give us your name for the record and your testimony, we would appreciate it. And you might be on mute if you're attempting to speak. I do see you logged in, but you might be on mute if you're attempting to speak. Matt Melanthan? Melanthan? All right. Well, Chair Stevenson, why don't we turn to discussion, and if Mr. Melanthan is able to join in, I'll certainly patch him in at that time. But why don't we open this up now for committee conversation and debate. We'll begin with, oh, wait a minute, something's happening. This looks like Mr. Melanthan. Are you there?
Chair Mariani?
Yes, I'm hearing a voice.
Oh, wow, this is Representative Nye. I do have a phone number for Mr. Milton. I can give him a call and see if he's having struggles.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. It looks like he's attempting to screen share. I'm not sure, but if you could do that, I would certainly appreciate it.
Chair Mariani, I will have a question later, but I'll be off trying to take care of that.
Very well. Why don't I see if other committee members wish to engage at this time, and if we can get the citizen in, we'll do that, and then we'll come back to committee discussion. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple questions, and they get a little bit technical. To the author on
Representative Raleigh, can't imagine you asking a technical question. That's blows my mind. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. To the author, as far as intent, page 1, line 21, it says casino means an establishment in which gaming is lawfully conducted by an Indian tribe in the state of Minnesota. And then it goes on to reference the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. Do you feel that it's the intention of the author, Representative Stevenson, to change the definition of casino to now only be for pursuant to the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, so that no other entity could be called a casino unless they were underneath the gaming that is lawfully conducted by an Indian tribe?
Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raleigh. No, and I would direct your attention to give a technical answer to a technical question. I would direct your attention to lines 1.6 through 1.7 terms. For the purpose of this chapter, the following terms have the meanings given them. In other words, that means that the definition of casino that you just read is only the definition for the purposes of this chapter and not in any other place in law, or it's certainly in general use throughout the state.
Very well, Representative Raleigh.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the word casino is defined later on, so I was wondering if it followed through, but that's a great explanation that it only applies to this particular chapter. The next question that I've got is related to the classifications of the games. So, if we go to page 2, it defines class 3 gaming as the meanings given underneath United States Code 25, section 2703. And then if we go to that that public law, class 1 games are, and I won't read the whole thing, I'll read slightly or just a short piece of it. The term class 1 gaming means social games and typically means a game of chance known as bingo. Class 2 games, there's a lot of words to it, but in effect it says card games. And then it says for the term class 3, meaning all forms of gaming that are not class 1 gaming or class 2 gaming. So the question that I've got is, if we're defining class 3 gaming as all other games, does that mean that now with this law going into effect, all games would now be underneath the purview of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act? Or could it be claimed that any game whether it's a chance or for a wager, would now be classified as part of Class 3 gaming. Mr. Chair.
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, the answer to your question is no. The reason why is, first, again, recall what the same answer I gave you before, is that these terms then are only defined and only have meaning within the chapter. The reason for classifying Class 3 gaming and defining it in relation to IGRA is so that when it's used in this document, people can know what types of games we are talking about. So it doesn't have any effect on those activities to define what Class 3 gaming is here, unless later in the document, the words Class 3 gaming specifically are used in a fashion that gives it legal meaning. When I search for Class 3, mm-hmm. I see that there are six mentions of Class 3 gaming. And the first one, and I think the most opportune one, says it's unlawful to bet on sports except in a manner that's consistent with this, unless it's Class 3 gaming at a tribe or a tribal state compact, which we can have under IGRA. Tribal state compacts allow you to allow tribes to authorize Class 3 gaming on their lands. So I don't want to get too far. Hopefully I've answered your question. If I haven't, let me know and I'll keep going. But the answer really is that's a reference point. So we're all talking about the same thing, but it doesn't change the way that everything else is regulated under other law or isn't regulated under law. It's just making sure that we're talking about the same thing.
Representative Raleigh.
Great. And then, so all of this relates back down to the esports events. So when we get into the esports, it's a competition between individual, and this is page 2.8, subdivision 8. It's a competition between individuals or teams using video games in a game, match, contest, or series of games. I'm an electronic gamer. I play like Call of Duty and a few other games. Would an electronic game like, and I'll use Call of Duty because it's a pretty big esport, would Call of Duty as a game fall underneath the definition now in this section of Class 3 gaming?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh, I don't know if it would fall under the definition of Class 3 gaming because I would have to look at IGRA. Right. I don't know if Mr. Johnson would have an answer to that. I think probably not, okay. Because I think that, can I defer to Mr. Johnson and see if he has a good, better answer to that question first, as I think about it a little bit too?
And I do want to encourage members to recall the Chair Stevenson's early comment about this needing to travel to five committees. So Representative Raleigh, your question is certainly in order. It technically falls outside the scope of the jurisdiction of this committee, but obviously all these things are interlinked. So I don't want to discourage that, but I also want to encourage that there may be other venues that can further this conversation beyond today. It looks like you, Chair Stevenson, you were calling on Mr. Johnson to weigh in quickly here.
Yes, please.
Very well. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to struggle through here as best I can. No problem. The short answer to your question is going to be no. The fact that it is a game does not make it a Class 3 game. It is going to need to involve some form of financial wagering to be involved on it. So betting on an esports game puts it in a different category than simply playing the game, like playing Call of Duty or something like that. So it's the extra step of betting or gambling that puts it under IGRA.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps I didn't ask the question correctly. You're going to exactly what I'm asking. if in the esports betting world, if you have a Call of Duty or any other type of an e-game that you are setting up as a competition for wagering on, that's what I'm looking at, because esports is something I've been involved in for a long time, lots of different games. And I'm just wondering, so maybe I'll ask the question a different way to the author, Mr. Chair, is in esports, and whether it's a shooter game or an esport like a basketball game or any of the others, how would betting on those esports games fall underneath the purview of the lawful sports betting bill? I guess maybe that'll be the broader question for the author, Mr. Chair.
Chair Stevenson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh. Thank you. I can understand the question, what you're driving at. So if you look at the definition of esports, you can see that in order to qualify under this definition, first of all, it can't be like something that looks like some other type of gaming. So you couldn't have like electronic blackjack or something. Spectators have to be able to watch it in person, and the video game has to be approved by the commissioner for wagering. So in other words, what has to happen is that the regulatory entity has to say, we're going to allow people on DraftKings or FanDuel or whatever platforms get approved in Minnesota to bet on Call of Duty. If not, then it isn't under this bill at all. This bill does not, it has nothing to do with it. If it does, if the commissioner does approve wagering on that, on esports through FanDuel or DraftKings, then it can happen under this law. I would say that otherwise, current law about the legality of betting on Call of Duty is what applies.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Let's see, we have Representative Otney. You might be muted.
Thank you, Chair. I believe the testifier is available if you wanted to go back to him quick.
All right, Mr. Melanthin, if you can come forward, state your name for the record, and let us know if you are attempting to share something on screen as well. And you might be muted. Representative Novotny, it looks like we are continuing to have a technical difficulty with the testifier.
Yeah, I can see him there. Looks like he's just muted still. I'll have a quick question just for the author.
Yeah, please, Representative Novotny.
And I'll take that out of the way. So, Representative Stevenson, it looks like in my reading of this that the 100% of the mobile action has to go through the tribal units. If that is true, is this the only path forward for this bill, with 100% of the tribes having control of this?
Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Novotny. The bill does put mobile gaming. It would only allow entities I'll just back up. Yes, the answer to your question is the only people in the state who could operate mobile gaming would be entities that are consisted of tribes. The reason for that is that this would be the most significant change in our gaming law in 40 years in Minnesota. Tribes are the subject matter experts on gaming in Minnesota. They've been doing it longer, more successfully than anyone else. Indian gaming is the most highly regulated gaming in the world. So when we're gonna make such a big change, it makes sense to entrust that to the most experienced players at the table, which in this case is the tribes. When you go into a tribal casino and play a hand of blackjack, you can be sure that you're gonna get your money's worth if you win. And we want people who engage in sports betting to have the same experience.
Representative Adi.
I think I understand the response there. Once again, I'll try to contact Mr. Matt there and direct him on how to turn his mic on.
Very well, thank you, sir. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, I've been looking at this and listening to this. I'm just wondering, on this bill, the expansion of gambling. One area that we have that does gambling, I was a gambling manager at one time for a charitable gambling organization. I think this bill is actually going to hurt them. Well, our local organizations, our VFWs, our town baseball teams, our legions have charitable gambling. The pull tabs and the e-pull tabs. And there's so much funds from that goes to our local communities, helping our local communities, whether it's the town baseball team, or whatever. There are so many organizations they donate to. They help our fire departments and our volunteer fire departments, helping get equipment. One thing I have noticed is in those situations, when the state went to having their own lottery, the revenue for our local communities and our local charitable gambling organizations went down. Now we're opening it up again to more situations where our local communities are not going to be receiving the funds to help in our community. So I have concerns with that. As long as I brought up the lottery, I don't know if members know this or not, but the lottery has a lower payback requirement than what we do on our charitable gambling organizations. The state takes more money in per dollar, higher percentage per dollar, than what we allow our local charitable gambling organizations. And now I have a question. We have different companies coming in that are going to make millions of dollars off the citizens of Minnesota. Yes, they're doing it on the dark side now on different apps. But just because we have to have some license and controlled by the tribes doesn't mean that those other apps aren't going to be out there where they can still do the gambling without being licensed in Minnesota. They're hard to find. They're hard to find where they're headquartered. They might be located outside the continental or outside the United States, making it even harder to go after them. These mobile apps do make it difficult because they could be anywhere in the world. I'm just wondering if Representative Stevenson can tell me how they're going to stop these other apps being available in Minnesota and not just allow the required license one.
Chair Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, for that question. That is a big part of the bill is to try and choke off the lifeblood of those black market sports betting websites, the bets, by funneling them into the legal market. I think the answer to your question is that people, if they have the opportunity to participate in the legal market through apps like DraftKings and MGM and Caesars, will choose that and will not choose to go hunting for a black market app. It's kind of like if all you could buy was RC Cola because Pepsi and Coke was illegal, you would do that maybe. But if Pepsi and Coke were available, most people are probably going to choose that. Right now, the brand names are illegal in Minnesota, and so people are looking for the knockoffs in the black market. But if we make the brand names available, most people will choose that. Will everybody? I can't say for certain, but I think that you've seen dramatic decreases in black market activity in states where you have the legal option. And I think that those offshore websites aren't engaging in the kind of advertising that, you know, Caesars, MGM, and the others are doing right now on the legitimate market, which is only going to further drive people to that side. You're right that a lot of these offshore sites are offshore by definition, right? They're in some other country, and so we can't go and shut them down. But what we can do is probably outcompete them, and that's how we ultimately beat them. I do want to just disagree pretty strongly with two things that you said. One is I don't know that this is an expansion of gambling, as you just said, and as others have said, people are already doing this in Minnesota. This is about moving people into the legitimate market from the black market. I also think for that reason, it's not going to hurt charities, because even if we accept the idea that there's a finite pool of gambling dollars, right now, a huge amount of those gambling dollars are going to these offshore websites. People are wagering on sports. Those are the dollars that are going to move into sports betting. I think that e-pull tabs and sports betting are pretty different, or pull tabs and sports betting are pretty different. I think it's pretty unlikely that people are not going to be playing pull tabs because now they can legally gamble on sports. And I would just also note that we devote a huge proportion of the proceeds from this to a lot of the same local organizations that are funded right now through charitable gaming. So I think they actually will benefit from this bill when you're talking about the town baseball team and other local sports options.
Representative Lee Johnson.
Thank you, Representative Stevens, for that information. But I'm trying to remember what the payout was to those organizations. But there's a lot of other organizations that get funding that are not local sports teams and stuff like that might lose out on this. Like I said, our volunteer fire departments usually receive a lot of the equipment through that, through the local charitable gambling. But I have some other, I think most of the questions I asked or we're going to ask were asked by other members. And I know one thing I have is a question. That question was answered. One other thing is probably should have been taken up in the tax committee with these winnings that these individuals receive. Should they win, are they going to be receiving 1099 forms? To make sure that they are paying their income tax on this, or are they exempt from income tax?
Chair Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that is a good question. And we certainly are going to go through the tax committee. I don't believe, and Mr. Johnson, I hate to ask him to speak again. I don't believe that gains are excluded from, let me just quickly scan here. I don't see anything in here that would exclude it from income. And I believe, in other words, let me just say it this way. I don't see anything in here that would change the way that gaming law or gambling winnings are taxed under current law. So I think that your gambling winnings would be taxed, your sports betting winnings would be taxed the same way if you hit big on pull tabs.
I'm saying Mr. Plato nodding his head. I almost hesitate to drag you in, sir, but if you have anything to add, please do. If not, that's fine too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that Chair Stevenson answered the question accurately.
Okay, very well. Representative Johnson.
I appreciate that, because I know there are some things on there dealing with the tax issue. I just want to make sure nothing got inadvertently changed, because that could have a huge ramification on how things go with this. I will end it there. As you know, I stated before, I have a lot of issues with some of the bills today because of it. It's sin bill day. I have trouble with gambling, and so I can't handle the expansion of it. So I do have to, I cannot support this with those black or the dark illegal, even if there are some of those issues with the online gaming. I think our federal government needs to step up and do some things that they haven't to shut some of those illegal websites down. Maybe the federal government needs to come in and regulate the online gaming, because it is not only nationwide, but it's worldwide, and find a way to shut the ones that aren't doing things properly down.
Very well, thank you, Lee Johnson. We do respect your views and the right to articulate those here, absolutely. I did see Mr. Miller, I think he's still trying to get in. We only have 5 minutes left. I want to make sure we get to a vote. It looked like he tried to get in and it didn't work. So I'm going to apologize to him, and perhaps Representative Otney, we can find a way to help him connect with some of the other committees if, in fact, this bill continues to move forward. Representative Stevenson, if you can close us out, then we're going to move to vote.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the really robust discussion here today. And I think that we can continue to have this conversation. As you alluded to, we have many more committee steps to go on this bill. And I encourage members to contact me with suggestions, questions, or concerns. And I'd ask for your yes vote today.
Very well. I do appreciate your openness and engagement with other members and all stakeholders here, Chair Stevenson. With that, Representative Fraser renews his motion that House File 167 167 as amended be referred to the Committee on Human Services. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Fraser.
Aye.
Vice Chair Fraser, aye. Lee Johnson.
No.
Lee Johnson, nay. Rep. Edelson.
Aye.
Rep. Edelson, aye. Rep. Feist.
Aye.
Rep. Feist, aye. Rep. Grossel.
No.
Rep. Grossel, nay. Rep. Hollins.
Aye.
Rep. Hollins, aye. Rep. Hewitt.
Aye.
Rep. Hewitt, aye. Rep. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Rep. Cleavorn, aye. Rep. Long.
Aye.
Rep. Long, aye. Rep. Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Rep. Lucero, nay. Rep. Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Rep. Mueller, nay. Rep. Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Rep. Novotny, aye. Rep. O'Neill.
Oh, hold on.
Back up.
Back up on, can you call Rep. Novotny again?
Rep. Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Oh, Rep. Novotny, nay, excuse me. Rep. O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
Rep. O'Neill, nay. Rep. Pinto.
Aye.
Rep. Pinto, aye. Rep. Poston.
Aye.
Rep. Poston. Rep. Poston, aye.
Rep. Yes.
Raleigh. Raleigh, nay.
Rep. Raleigh, nay. Rep. Vang.
Aye.
Rep. Vang, aye. Rep. Shung.
Aye.
Rep. Shung, aye. With 12 ayes and 7 nays, that concludes roll call.
With 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 167, as amended, is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Good luck. Big, complex bill. Big step. Glad that we're, regardless of how we feel, we're being very responsible about making sure we're very careful and thorough with it. I wish you good speed with it, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Members, that concludes our business for today. We will reconvene tomorrow at our regular time. We'll have, I think, 3 bills up tomorrow. So please have a good, safe, and restful evening, and we'll see you tomorrow morning. With that, this committee stands adjourned.